Good morning, Mick Mulcahy on the Neil Prendeville Show. Neil is returning after news at 9 next Monday morning. Our next caller is a former professional footballer from Cork. He played for Ipswich Town under Roy Keane and came through the youth system at Liverpool FC, but had struggled with gambling addiction throughout much of his football career. And while we've done many women's issues and women's rights and the like over the last week, this is something that predominantly affects men, though not exclusively. You've struggled with gambling addiction, Shane. Good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm good. You sound bright and chipper anyway. Let's look back at a career that saw you playing for Roy Keane, under Roy Keane, and the youth system at Liverpool FC. That's a young career of promise. It kind of wasn't to be fulfilled, though.
Yeah, no, I was really lucky. I had the opportunity to move to England to play for Liverpool when I was 16. I lived over there for roughly about 6 years. I made the move to Ipswich after about 3 years when I realised I probably wasn't going to reach the level to play in the Premier League for Liverpool. And I got the opportunity to play for my childhood hero at Ipswich. And I actually had a relatively successful time in Ipswich. I broke into the first team my first season. I played in the Championship, which would be the level just below the Premier League. And I actually thought, I suppose, I was going to kick on from there. And as luck would have it, I got injured probably in my second year in Ipswich, and Roy ended up getting sacked. A new manager came in. And like anything, my face didn't really fit with the new manager, for whatever reason, which is okay. And football is very much like a conveyor belt over there. The players are so quickly coming through. And if you don't play, if you're not playing regularly, you can fall down the pecking order quite quickly. And I suppose that's what happened to me. I went from playing in front of, I suppose, thousands of people in stadiums to being sat at home on a Saturday afternoon. And I substituted that feeling of going and playing on the football pitch with something else, which I started to gamble then, which was something I'd never done previously. I'd seen people gamble on buses. I'd seen friends gamble before that. And it was something that never really interested me. And when I was 20, 21 years of age is when I actually started to do it myself.
21 is young though, Shane. 21 is young, but I suppose you've got a young head on your shoulders trying to change from the elation and the validation of playing in front of, you know, performing really in front of thousands of people and the endorphins that will release, you know, and the sense of self-respect, etc. You struggled with and began to fall into gambling. Was that as a coping mechanism for the change in football life?
I think looking back, it definitely was. It was something I used to substitute that feeling. I suppose, as well to that point, I was very heavily involved in sport. I know my competitive edge, a huge of that was I played for the Pairship back home in Cork there, and they were, I suppose, I owe my childhood to them. They gave me everything in regards, although I went down the soccer route. GA was really my huge upbringing. And I always had, an upward curve on career trajectory in regards to sport. I was always very good. I was always probably the best on my team and stuff like that. So when I started to not play in Ipswich, it was the first time, I suppose, I started to take a downward spiral. And I probably didn't know how to deal with that either. I was still only 20 years of age, turned 21. I was living away from home. I was living on my own. Probably wasn't leaning on anyone for any sort of advice. I was just probably dealing with everything as if I was maybe beyond my years, really, looking back on it, to be honest with you. There wasn't really a support level over there. So when I started to turn to gambling, that was nearly giving me a feeling. I started to look forward to the bets instead of looking forward to playing football. I started to look forward to putting place in bets. So I think that's what ended up giving me that coping mechanism from not playing.
Just to establish a timeline here, what year was that to your memory?
So I would have started gambling around 2011. 2011.
Okay. So you were coping with maybe a little bit of disappointment, a nice helping of stress, the vacancy really of not playing football to the level you felt you could deliver, and looking for, to put a simple word in it, I suppose, a cushion, an escape mechanism, which will allow you to divert yourself from real life problems and find some sort of solace and happiness. But of course, you're looking at something very, very dangerous when it comes to gambling, because it can affect you mentally and physically. It'll certainly affect you financially, unless you're, you know, of the likes of the JPs of the world. And it will certainly affect your relationship with your family and your friends. Yeah. Can you give us some detail on that story? You know, how it developed, how it got worse, and the personal toll.
Yeah, so I'll try and take through it. So in 2012, I actually made the decision to move back to Ireland, and I always used that as a fairly prominent year in my life in 2012. I wasn't getting any more opportunities in England. I decided to come home for 6 months, and I thought I would go back to England after a few months when I got my career back on track. I moved back to Cork, and I always say, as soon as I stepped off the ferry and came back to Cork, I was a full-time gambler, part-time footballer. I never again reached the heights. I actually, all I wanted to do was gamble. I would fake injury so I wouldn't have to go training, play matches. My whole life revolved around gambling. At the start of 2012, I was actually a full-time footballer in England. And by the time at the end of 2012, I was no longer playing football. And for any team for the next year, I completely took hold of me. I was just gambling. It was the first thing I'd done in the morning. It was the last thing I'd done at night, and it was everything in between. So it really took hold of me that year. My nan died, who would have been a huge prominent figure for me at a young age throughout my life. When she died in 2012, it nearly compounded the misery of that whole year, to be honest with you. But it started to snowball from that year. Now, I would have never believed I had a gambling problem right up until the end. I always felt I was in control of it. I could stop when I wanted. It was just something that I was doing to get out of different holes or different problems I was after causing myself. But my gambling addiction took me everywhere, to be honest with you, Neil. I tried to take my own life. I broke relationships with friends. I lied to friends. I stole from friends. My family, I lied to them countless times over and over again. I stole from my family. I stole items from my house, including sister's iPads, brought down to the game shop to sell them. There was nothing I wouldn't have done to fund my gambling addiction.
Okay. People, when they think about gambling, if they don't gamble themselves, they see a loser just pouring money over the counter. What were your win-loss ratios, though? There must be the endorphins and the sense of satisfaction when you beat the bookie. It's not all about losing.
No, I suppose that's the high you're trying to recreate. I mean, I remember winning bets, and it would bring you up to this real high, and that's almost creating that endorphin rush that you were getting when I was playing in front of thousands of people. It was giving me that buzz. I was the person throughout my gambling that I would bet to zero. I could be up. I remember winning 11,000 euros on the Ryder Cup back in 2012 on the Miracle in Medina. And I remember I won that on the Sunday evening. And by the Monday morning, I was driving up to training and I had nothing left in my account. I wasn't able to just put the bet down and walk away. I was a bet to zero type of person.
In that sense, the bookies will always win then.
Always went against me because I was a disordered gambler. I didn't know my relationship with gambling at the time. I didn't understand my relationship with gambling. I just always had to bet. By the time it came to maybe 2015, 16 and onwards, I was no longer betting for the buzz anymore. I was just doing it because it was taking me away. It was letting me escape because I was a failed footballer. I didn't know how to deal with that. So it was just taking me out of my own life, really. And that brought me into the life of my kids as well. And when I met Holly, when it took me from being responsible for just myself, and now responsible for other people, responsible for kids, responsible for paying bills, responsible for all that. As a disorder gambler, I wasn't able to do that. And I let them down countless times over and over again. And it really took, me hit rock bottom in regards to, not being allowed in the family home anymore, not being able to see the kids anymore. That really was the last straw for me. We've been able to change.
Did you meet Holly in the middle of your problems?
I did. I met Holly in 2016 and I actually moved to Dublin for a couple of years to live up there because my partner's from Dublin before we moved back down to Cork. And I actually remember I had a conversation early on. I was saying, I think I have a problem with gambling. Holly would have never known the extent of what it was. And listen, I got found out plenty of times. I remember we had money put away in the credit union. I was taking money from there. There was countless times I needed money. But I do mean this when I say it. If it wasn't for Holly, I'm not sure I would be where I am today. I think everyone to be, and they have right so to not have anything to do with me. But if it wasn't for Holly, I'm not sure I would have been able to come out the other side. Mm. She stood by me, to be honest, when no one else did. And even when she saw the good in me, when, to be honest, I didn't even see the good in myself. I just thought I was this horrible person and there was no real hope for me in getting better. And without her support and guidance, I'm not sure I'd be here today,
Was it just the addiction to placing the bet? Were you doing it over the counter? Were you doing it online? And what sort of guardrails were put in place professionally by the gambling companies to recognize that you have a problem and to help you to beat it?
Yeah, like, and I'm not an anti-gambling kind of guy. I mean, if someone can do it healthily and they understand the relationship and they can bet like a normal person, that's absolutely fine. But I don't think there's anything wrong with someone doing it if they can see it for what it is, fun, and it's just a bit of fun for them. But for me, I was a disordered gambler. I used to use it on the phone. I didn't have to put my 2 feet out of the bed in the morning and I could put a bet on. So I was predominantly through the phone. If I only had cash on me, I would go to the bookies, but I didn't like it because I felt I couldn't control the outcome. I felt, especially with the introduction of cash out, you were able to cash out if a bet wasn't going the right way, and then you could maybe get on another bet on your phone. I was 99.9% on my phone, 0.1% in the bookies. So, but it gave me the opportunity to cut all the time, be looking for the next bet, the next bet, the next bet. Mm-hmm. If I had a bet on, I would be looking for what's going to go on next and what's going to go on next. If you saw my screen time when I was gambling, if I was awake for 24 hours, I'd say 23 hours, 50 minutes was my screen time on my phone. I was completely taken away from reality. I was not present in any moment, my kids, my family, with work, whatever it would have been. I was only focused on what the next bet was, you know.
And would you liken it to maybe an alcoholic being put into a bar that never closes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a great analogy. Yeah, absolutely. Because there is no escape from it. There was no escape from the gambling for me. I could pick up my phone. I could get onto the bookies. I could ask them for a free bet. And to probably go back to your earlier question, I would ask the bookies for a free bet. And dependent on how much I had bet with them, and it's actually not how much bet, how much I had lost previously, I would end up getting a free bet nearly based off that amount. So I used to get maybe in the hundredths of a free bet at a time. And because they know, I would end up giving it back when I had it again. Where if you're just a normal Joe So and you're putting on a bet, they might go, oh, here's a €5 free bet, or they might not even offer you one. But because they knew my transaction history, they know how much bets I was going to put on, and they knew I was, I suppose, a returning customer, they were comfortable in giving me that sort of bet because they knew I'd be back again, you know.
Okay, I want to concentrate briefly on your recovery, but any recovery means that you finally reached the bedrock of your self-worth, as they say. You hit rock bottom. You've alluded to the fact that Holly wouldn't allow you to see the children. You've alluded to the fact you were isolated from family at all levels. I know you spent nights sleeping in your car and continued to gamble despite losing almost everything important to you. When did the low point come?
Yeah, well, it wasn't as much as Holly not allowing me to see him. It was more a case of her saying, you have to get better if you want to be in their lives, and whatever that comes of us will come of that. Because she saw the damage I was causing, and it came to a stage where she said she can't allow this anymore. Because if you saw our lives from two years ago to now, it's night and day. And if she hadn't taken them steps, I would be continuing to live the life I lived then. So I needed someone to really do that. And it was, to be honest, the rug of my kids being pulled under from me and not being in the family home. Because my birth dad left when I was quite young, and through treatment, I learned, I suppose, I was always wondering why I wasn't good enough. And I never wanted my kids to grow up and think why they weren't good enough for their dad to change, or their dad to make the change to be in their life.
All right, Shane, just to re-establish the timeline, the rock bottom came for you in April 2024. So we're gonna look at the positives in a moment. Well, will you stay with me, and I'll be back to you in a couple of seconds. Thank you. Welcome back, Shane. Thanks for holding there.
Thank you.
I've got about 6 minutes to get to the rest of your story. Let me just synopsize it. You had a serious problem with gambling. You were ostracized from your family, by your family, you were isolated, you continued gambling despite losing almost everything important to you, and you hit rock bottom on the 7th of April, I think it was, 2024. So now comes time to change. Tell me about the change that happened. And maybe the old saying, to be an active participant in your own rescue, that's what's needed if you're going to stop drowning. Would that be fair enough? You have to want it.
Yeah, because actually, funny enough, earlier that year, my partner herself actually ran up Caver Lodge. She tried to get me to go in, and I had no intention of going in at the time. I said no. I remember with the €100 for the admission fee, and I actually ended up gambling it. But it was that day. I remember I rang him April 7th, 2024 was the last time I put on a bet. And the April 8th, I woke up the next morning. I rang Caver Lodge and I reached out for help and I said, please, can you help me? I remember on the phone they said to me, I have to pay. I think the fee went up to €120, and they said, if you paid €120, we can get you an admission. And I actually said, I remember saying to her on the phone, I said, if I had €120, I wouldn't be calling you. I need help now. I was actually out of family home. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was living in my car and I was struggling. And I thank God I was able to not bet from that day. I ended up getting the admission. I went into Tabor Lodge. But again, if it wasn't for my decision, and I honestly felt I had enough. I was broken on that day. I couldn't do any more. I felt I can't live this life anymore.
So did you raise the 120 and not gamble it?
No, I was working at the time, and I waited until payday on the Thursday. And as soon as I got paid on the Thursday, I rang them up and I paid it. So I actually had to wait the 4 days nearly before I was able to get the appointment for the consultation.
And 4 days without a bet.
4 days without a bet. Yeah, I didn't bet that day. But I do truly believe, looking back, that I had reached my point where I knew it was enough was enough for me. I hadn't bet for 2 weeks before I actually went into treatment. And I suppose when I went into treatment, I expected everyone to tell me why I was the way I was, how that, you know, they were going to fix me, inverted commas, fix me. But it was only when I was in treatment I understood that I wasn't able to be fixed, and it was only through taking accountability for my actions and learning about what I had done, and then being able to put some, you know, building blocks in place to when I come out that I won't go back down that road again.
So did you go into treatment to get fixed, or go in to learn maturely?
No,
you'll never be fixed.
Yeah, no, I genuinely thought when I went to treatment that I would be fixed and I would be told why I was the way I was, and that there was a reason for what I was doing. And I remember getting really annoyed with counsellors in there. I was constantly fighting back and forth because I thought that I was going to come out with this nearly illusion that, okay, I know what I was doing was wrong and I'm never going to do it again. But unfortunately, that's not the case with addiction. It's learning through traumas. It's learning through, there are reasons for what you've done. And it's not that you're a bad person. It's just you're trying to find the reasons that are behind it. And to be fair, they were fantastic with me in there. And if I had to go in again tomorrow and do it all over again, I would, you know. Although it was a very hard thing to do, to go in there for 4 weeks. I think I cried nearly every night in there, being away from the kids, just what I was asked putting my kids through. It was really eye-opening for me, to be honest with you, and it was the first time I was actually taking accountability for my actions, you know.
Have you realised that your worst day in recovery, and some of them must be pretty difficult, is always going to be better than your best day in addiction?
Yeah. It's funny you say that. I actually use that. I do a lot of talks now in regards to gambling harm, and that's one of the phrases I use. I'd also use the one where there's some good that will come from my addiction, and it's me being able to go and use my platform in speaking about gambling harm. So I feel there was a reason why I had the gambling addiction, because now I get the chance to go around and help others, you know.
Okay, in the time we've left, Shane, can you just tell us what you do now and how you're paying it forward to try and help other people who might be on that slippery slope, you know, casual gamblers maybe falling into addiction, and how you can preach as one of the most experienced, if you like, because you did hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
How do you preach to other people to avoid the pitfalls?
So I always use it is there's a gambling spectrum. I go back to trying to understand the relationship with gambling, and that can be anyone. It could be me and you in the room today. Everyone is on the gambling spectrum in some sort of, whether you've never gambled or you go all the way to a disorder gambler like me. And it's just understanding where you are on the scale. If you can put on a bet and walk away, that's fantastic. You're using it for what it is. It's just a bit of fun. If you start to teeter over the line into harmful gambling, where you're starting to put on a bet, or you feel the need, I need to put on a bet today. If there's World Cup games, I need to get a bet on. Then you might have to sit back and go, okay, what's my relationship here? Because I need to put a bet on. Why do you feel the need to? Or if you put on a bet and then you lose and you go, okay, I need to go again. Then that might be starting to become harmful gambling, where your thought process is, okay, I need to get that money back. So that's how I would speak to someone that reaches out to me now, and I try to explore their relationship with gambling, try and get to the bottom of where they feel and how they feel when they put the bet on. Because it's really, it's what emotion is it giving you when you put the bet on? Is it you put a bet, like for me, for example, I'll have a drink, I can put the drink down and not drink again. I know my relationship with drink, but with gambling, I'll always be a disorder gambler. Just because I haven't gambled for just over two years, I can't pick up at a non-gambling stage now.
How do people
always going to be disordered.
I tell you what, you're some talker. I'm trying to jump in here. How do people get in touch to avail of your services? I know you run Fundamental Football as well, which is kind of a training camp. Very quickly.
Yeah, but I encourage you to be on my platforms, Instagram, Facebook. I get a lot of direct messages. I actually have the opportunity to go around with a company called Epic Global Solutions, where I go around to League of Ireland teams, Premier League teams, EFL teams, where I go and speak about gambling harm. I've gone into corporate areas now, where I just tell my story and run a few educational slides, just around where someone might be in the room. They'll be able to see, okay, this might be harmful, it might not be them, it might be a family member. And it's amazing the amount of response I get actually after the fact, where people reach out and they say, okay, I see this trait in this person, or I actually see it myself. And it's, to be honest, it's really rewarding to be able to now help someone through the gambling harm process.
All right. Shane, thanks very much for talking to us. I don't want to forget Holly here, because Holly was your rock through all this. And
yeah.
I know you'll want to thank her, and will do for the rest of your life.
Yeah, to be honest, I think if it wasn't for, I wouldn't be here on the phone today, Mick, to be honest with you. So, I owe everything to her.
Great to talk to you, Shane. Thanks a million. Shane O'Connor's Gambling Addiction and Recovery, if you want to look him up online. Thank you, Shane. Now, if you've been affected by any of the issues raised in that discussion, you can call Gamblers Anonymous Cork on 087 285 955. 087, I think there might be a number missing there. So we'll call that out again after 11 o'clock. But news at 11 is next.